Riva. Okay, so so then continue with the qualities. Seven, steadiness of mind. Right, so Krishna's mind, he's focused, he's not all over the place. In other words, Krishna's not neurotic. Right? that's the basic point, you know. So in other words, a lack of steadiness of mind that you get, you know, that become neurotic. Eight, control of the sense organs. Nine, responsibility. 10, equality. 11, tolerance, right? Because equality means how you deal is how he reciprocates. So it's not that there's any difference. You deal nice, he'll deal nice. You deal inimical, he'll respond how you're dealing. So it's not that there's a difference. Some people may complain, oh, but he's killing the demons and he's, you know, so nice to the devotees. It's just because that he's just reciprocating the mood. That's all. So that's the position where equality comes in. Equality is that you deal with everyone according to how they deal. Yes?
In Finland, we have the saying, metsälastaani, sinne huudetaan, which means the forest, it responds as you shout or yell.
Oh, yes, yes, nice. Yeah, yeah. Yes, that's interesting. Responds as you shout. Yes?
Yeah, so he deals how people. But in the terms of.
Yes, that's the specialness is there. So that means every soul has the opportunity to become God conscious. So we're dealing. Krishna is always dealing in the platform of the soul. So now, let me say. So for Krishna, you're interested in God consciousness, he'll reciprocate that way. But Lord Chaitanya, you're not, he'll still give you, he'll expose you to Krishna consciousness, but you still have to respond like that. So he's very merciful in that way. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that the secondary aspects of what you're dealing with aren't dealt with that. So that's also an equality, is that according to the nature of the secondary item, you're always dealing with it according to its nature. So to say that, no, we'll deal with all items in the exact same way, that's not equality. The modern context is we'll call that equality, but it's not equality because that means something's being dealt with according to what its nature is, something else is being dealt with against its nature. So that's not equality. So by dealing with according to nature, that's actually equality. So the Vedic sense is that if someone behaves as a Brahmin, he's dealt with as a Brahmin. He doesn't behave as a Brahmin, he's dealt with however he's behaving. So if he does a Kshatriya, he's reciprocated that way by Shashudra, like this. So this idea is that, no, you have to take the external and deal all the same way. You know, so this chair and your car, you have to deal with them the same way. That's not intelligent, though. It's always, these kind of social constructs are always coming from people who claim to be intelligent, presenting that they're the intelligent. They're the, you know, objective and all these kind of things. But the problem is their motive for their objectivity is their subjectivity. They have an idea, this is good, this is bad, and then they make a philosophy based on that. I think it's like, was it Descartes? Is he a philosopher?
Yes.
Yeah, so he, you know, was very smart and his friends were all very smart, but he was a bit of a debauchee, if I'm getting the person right. And so then some of his friends complained about it. You know, he should behave a little better. So then he created a philosophy to support him being his debauchery. And it's, you know, still a philosophy being discussed today. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that they come up with their own stuff, but it's not about, they're attributing things that aren't right to something else. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that equality actually means that you're willing to, as the person actually is qualified, to deal with them on that platform. Inequality means that you would, they have the qualification, let's say they behave like a Brahmin, but you won't deal with them like a Brahmin, because you'll take some other external point. You know what I'm saying? So you're talking equality, but at the same time, it's you're not equal, because you're still taking an external element. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty of that. One's not functioning in a proper way. So when you take the position of the soul, then the opportunities are equal, and then that's applied according to the actual medium that you'll deal with. Right? Means, let us say if you go into the kitchen, someone doesn't know how to cook, and they're complaining that the cooks are discriminating between the various kitchen utensils. They should give them all an equal opportunity. You know? Why is it he just uses the knife and then puts it down and then the frying pan gets to fry? The knife wants to also do all that frying. It's okay, so then put the knife on the flame and then, you know, pour all the potatoes on the top. But first, before you did that, you took the potatoes, laid them all out on the counter, and took the frying pan and then beat them, you know, for a while. And then you took those crumbs and crumble them up and pour them on top of the knife that's on the fire. You know what I'm saying? So this is the difficulties of not seeing actually the nature of what they're dealing with. So it's not scientific at all, but it's always being presented that this is coming from the intellectual, educated, scientific community, when it's not. It's just coming from self-centered, you know, individuals, that they want something themselves, and so they're willing to, it's just, let's say, I want something, but I'm not, I won't present it that I want it, even if it's not necessarily great, but it's what I want, because then it'll look bad. Right, because if it's seen as self-centered, then unless the person's a victim, then it will always be seen in a bad light. Right, because if you're taking it that it's my position, this is what I'm doing, so it kind of has that air of confidence to it, and it's self-centered, it'll be seen as bad. So therefore, I have to present it as a generic social construct that it's natural everybody would follow, even though nobody else wants to follow it. So for myself, I'll do this. Does that make sense? So I've seen myself in management meetings. There's something. Somebody's doing something. Or present. Let's say you have the general meeting. Someone stands up. They present something. And they want to get this done. Now, I've seen it that I don't like the guy. The project, I'm not really worried about. If someone else is presenting it, I might listen. But because he's presenting it, I'm not going to listen. Because, you know, how you say, you know, 10 years ago he did this, and then when we first joined, then, you know, he ate my gulab jamun, and then in the previous lifetime, then, you know, he stole my tricycle, and then before that, you know, he ate my ham sandwich, and, you know, it just keeps on going. So therefore, I don't like this guy. You know, so then he presents it. Now I can't say I don't like him, because everyone going, well, come on, what are you talking? You know, well, this is a management meeting. It's not about your personal likes and dislikes. Now immediately you'll be shot down. So I have to find a generic thing that's against what he's doing, even though that thing that he's presenting might be good, and present it that it's a generic thing that no one is there, and I present it with, you know, good strength of argument and conviction and all that, and then maybe people vote for it and it's okay. So in this, I've stopped this one thing, I've stopped him, but in the process, I probably ruined a whole bunch of other devotees, you know, positions, opportunities, and everything like that. Have you not seen that in a management meeting? I've seen it so many times. And so that's the point, is we're not being equal. But we're trying to present it as equal. That's the point, is we're taking it from the personal equal, and I can't deal on the personal level because of some problem, the negative aspect. So then I kick it into the impersonal equal. And the impersonal equal, then the difficulty is unless it's presented from the Vedic, it will always be a problem. You know, and so in other words, it's a rule, it's a law, and that's why everybody does it. But here I'm just talking on these qualities and trying to make it sound like this and that. I've seen so many things go down just because there's one instance you want to stop, but you can't get it done because it'll look like it, oh, it's personal, or it's, you know, things like that. And so they'll make it generic and therefore ruin it for everybody who's in that area. So, you know what I'm saying? So that's why you see Krishna's equal. He doesn't do that. You know? If it's good, then it's good. Because the point is the thing is good. So I've seen smart managers, when this comes up, they'll split it between, okay, forget him, you know, like he's saying, and I'm going to do this. Forget that. What do we think of, you know, he's not running, we're not worried about who's running it. What do you think of the thing itself? And then it generally goes through. Then you say, okay, and what do you think about him running it? Then it's no. And okay, then who should do it? And then they'll come up with something, or, you know, okay, him with someone else, or no, someone else is more qualified. But I've seen that also. That's the only way I've seen them get around. They split it. Does that make sense? So then you're taking it, him on his position, and the particular policy on its. So it's just coming more to that element of Krishna's equality. That's something else, sir. No, you have, yeah.
Yeah, Maharaj, you mentioned about not being able to see scientifically the nature of a thing.
Yes.
So, what are the ways to find out one's own and another's nature?
From scripture.
Yeah.
It means we can only go by scripture and then be observant and see that. So, in other words, this concept of being observant is not a problem, but observant or pratyaksha has to be based on scripture. If we just base pratyaksha and then what we've seen and then try to establish that as fact, it will always fail. It'll always make problem because it's material. But if we start with scripture and then try to establish, then use the pratyaksha, then because you have a common basis, others can either see and agree with it. Yeah, I've always said, or it can be, well, I've seen like this, and you can discuss it till you come to a point where it's properly applied. But the point is, this authority starts with shabda. Right? So anuman, or the, you know, the speculative element trying to connect things, and observation with the senses, pratyaksha, that has to be based on shabda or scripture, authority. And so then authority, what you've heard, but that means you've heard from apta, means those who are, you know, the authorized persons. You know, the scriptures, the acharyas, the Lord's associates, not the internet. That's not shabda. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's not shabda. So one has to be, okay, if it's in line with shabda, great, because then the whole idea is that you should practically be able to see what the scriptures say. But you have to start from scripture. And if you say, oh, but that's so theoretical, it'll slow things down, but better things are slower and it's efficient, you get the real thing, then go through a hasty thing and then you're stuck with that for years. You know, because then it doesn't matter. These things don't go away.
So if one wants to establish a proper society, it starts with education.
Yes, it always starts with education. That's what Prabhupada said, we're an educational movement.
Yeah.
Like that. You know, so the temple is a center of education. That's why it's important. Some will say, "Is, you know, oh no, we're in the age of communities. We don't need temples." Mm-hmm. But the point is the temple is always the center of the community. And then if this community is very big, then probably expect there will be many temples. Like we mentioned, in Delhi, Prabhupada foresaw 20 temples. You know, at that time. Because the place is so big and people live in their own little neighborhoods and all the shops, everything. People don't leave their area, you know. So then you have a temple there and that'll take care of that area. Like we were in, what was it, M Block. Like that. And so you can understand, if there's M block, then there's, you know, it started with A, you know, and it's still going. So it means all those can have their own temples. So, and so people from the locale would come there. And now they shifted over to Santnagar, and so people from the locale come. At Janmashtami, they'll come from all over Delhi. But on a regular basis, daily or weekly, they'll only come from the locale. So Prabhupada's idea, there should be 20 temples. You know? So it does work if people are going. Like you see in many established places, there's a church on every block, practically. So that means the people from that area go to that church, and the next, you know, you're two blocks away, you go to that, the other church. You know, or if not, you like this guy better, it's two blocks away, you can walk over. So it doesn't matter. The point is you're going, not who's, I say, you know, in other words, Krishna's the lord of that city, you know, like Radha Parish Ishwara, London Ishwara, Right. Does that make sense? Yeah. And yes.
You just gave this example of this managerial meeting. So perhaps another example would be this current political situation in the United States. The government is supposed to do good things for the state, for the people. So they presented, you know, that there is a politically correct way to present this in such a way. But actually what internally goes on is that Democrats won't support Republicans' projects because it would make position of Republican president stronger, and Republicans will never support projects, useful projects for the nation.
Yes, yes, because it's Democratic.
It would make Republican president weaker. So basically, in a state of a limbo, the government is paralyzed, and the nation is losing out on everything.
Yes. But so it's about the political position. It's not actually about the protection of the people. That's why administration means protecting the people. But in this, because why would you have such a system? So the system is that, you know, coming out from the past, but especially from the 1700s, the way of thinking is the idea that no one should get too powerful. So you create a system that no one can become too powerful because there's too many opposing elements, so no one can get, you know, out of too high. It's like the Mauritian frog, you know, program. You know the Mauritian frogs?
I think so.
Right? Everyone knows the Mauritian frogs?
No.
No? Is that one time... This was a story told by a Mauritian. That one time there was a tender put out, you know, it means a contract put out by the French, you know, some either the French government or some big corporation in France for frog legs. And so different places in the world, they brought their tender, you know, they brought their what they were offering, and that... And so then once all that was in, then the authorities, they called, everybody spoke to them in that. So then at the end, they called the Mauritians. And they said, okay, so you've given your offer for, you know, on how much it would cost for a box of frogs. But everybody else is like competitive, you know, within a little, you know, a few cents this way, that way, or something like that. But yours is significantly less priced. So how is that? You know, because the others are all there, so it's competitive. So we can understand is okay, a little bit of this or that, or someone's taking a little less profit or that. How can you do for so less? We can't understand how that's possible because they don't want to give them the contract and find out it was just a trick. So then the Mauritian guy said, no, it's real. We're able to give you for so much less because our overheads are less. See, everybody else has to have this very solid box to keep the frogs inside with a nice tight lid and everything. So it takes good construction. We don't put lids on our boxes. You know, we just have a box, and it doesn't have to be a good box. It's a shabby box. And no lid. So we save on the box. And so that savings goes to you. And they said, but if you don't have a lid on the box, the frogs will hop out of the box. And the Mauritian said, yes, that's for all frogs everywhere else, but these are Mauritian frogs. Said, Mauritian frogs? So the frogs. No, they're Mauritian frogs. Says, well, how does that work? He says, if one frog is trying to crawl out of the box, all the other frogs will grab him and drag him back in. Right? You understand the principle? No one can get out of the, you know, it's like anybody tries to gets a little bit bigger, then everybody attacks him and pulls him down. So that's the, and so, you know, George Washington put together the, you know, you could say one of the most stable processes of democracy that, you know, that goes on in a more, how you say, pleasant way. You know, you don't see as much yelling and screaming like, let's say, in the British Parliament or other places like that. It's a very sober and it's a solid system. But it's designed that no one has too much power. They always call it the balance of power. You have the executive, you have the judiciary, and I can't remember what, legislative. And between them, they can't actually, no one can get enough power to do anything. So as long as it kind of goes along and limps along and people kind of get something, then it's considered, you know, hooray democracy. Yeah, you know, so. So that's the whole idea, is that they don't want it. They don't want anyone to get ahead. So we have to be very, very careful here, is that, as Prabhu pointed out, is that, okay, no one gets ahead in power, but also the people, what's the whole point of the thing, don't actually get the full benefit. So since it's about Krishna, it's not about the individuals involved. It's about who will be the best to do something for Krishna. So even you don't like the guy, but he's the best at doing it, then he should be doing it. You know, just because he, you know, stole your gulab jamun when you're a new bhaktas, it doesn't matter. You know, he's inconsiderate, he's, you know, does this, that, you know, funny things. So we have to be very, very careful that, you know, these things apply directly. So we're talking about qualities, but at the same time, as we'll say, we'll use equality to get done what we want, but it's not equal. Right? He says, what is it? The saying, all animals are created equal, just some are more equal than others. You know, so that's so whoever's in power, they're the more equal. They'll say equal to keep everybody else down, but in reality, it's not. It's just, that's the whole point. Krishna actually deals how you do. You're more sincere. You get more response, but response comes in devotion, not necessarily in secondary. We're thinking, oh, but I'm so sincere. Why does he have more facility? Because you're more sincere. He's less sincere. He has facility. You have devotion. But I want this. Okay, fine. So we have to be very careful that all these things, they have a real effect. You know, we talk about, oh, it's this and that. So then we'll say, oh, but it's not the system, or somebody's too powerful, or this or that. No, it's none of that. It's just that we're not doing what Krishna says. How he sets example, how the acharyas, what's recommended by the acharyas. They say the system. You follow it, it's nice. Yeah. So, good? Yes?
You mentioned this about the demons which were Balaram killed, Pranamasa and Nirukasura. You mentioned that we have to identify and
His point is that if you perform devotional service, all the anartas that are there from the demons that Krishna kills, if you're sincerely trying to serve Krishna, just that absorption in the service, all those qualities will go away. You know, those bad qualities will go away. But the ones that Balaram kills, you have to be aware that they're there and try to be making your effort to get rid of them. It means that you're trying to do your service avoiding those bad qualities. And then Krishna will see, then by Krishna's mercy, then Balaram will remove them.
This is material attachment and loss.
Basically, it comes down to kind of like that. So it means we have to be aware that we're willing to give up the desire to try to control and enjoy and everything that we can, you know, everything that we see. That's why you see it constantly coming up, the point about one has to give up sense gratification. It doesn't mean the specifics. We generally take it as the secondary, the specifics. It means the concept of sense gratification. That we're not engaging in something because the benefit we'll get for the senses. We're engaging in something because of its benefit for Krishna. Does that make sense? So, therefore, we're not interested in what sensual benefit we'll get out of something. That's the meaning of giving up sense gratification. Right? Not that the senses are engaged, because that then comes into the jnana aspect of detachment, where we take it that, no sense gratification means the senses aren't being engaged. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, you're having a nice feast and all that, and the brahmacharis are eating nicely, you know, and everybody's happy and, you know, like that, and Krishna consciousness, and then there's that one grumpy wall over in the corner who is, you know, this is Maya, this is nonsense, all these brahmacharis enjoying themselves. And, That's impersonalism. That comes to the ideas that the sages that are going for liberation, that's all they have. That powers their realization. Is that they do not engage the senses. That's all they have. And from that they get liberation. From Naishkarma you get liberation. But here then we see is the devotees are enjoying prasad. Prasad is Krishna. They're engaging the senses in Krishna's service. And so it's Naishkarma and they're getting bhakti. So there are two different levels. One's material and one's spiritual. Right? Does that make sense? Because we're most of the time make the mistake is that, okay, as mlechas and yavanas, then we don't have good qualities and we're just engaged in sense gratification and you know, gross things of anything. You engage the sense, it's there. So therefore, spiritual has to be the opposite of that. Right? Sound like a familiar philosophy? Right? Shankaracharya, he gave this philosophy. So then in here is that, so spiritual can't be that you're enjoying the senses, that you know the relations between devotees is nice, it's comfortable, there's nice families, nice community, nice relationships between everybody has. It can't be that because that's what goes on in the material world and that's what gives us misery, because if it's good, great, and if it's not good, then I suffer because I want it to be great. You know? So then we get this distorted idea of what means control of the senses, what religion actually means. So we interpret it according to our own, right? You know, because like you see in the Western, let us say, okay, the person engages his senses, right? And so he's a sense enjoyer, right? He has his parties, he has his this, and you know, he enjoys life, right? Then we have somebody, okay, let's say if we take it in the, you know, European context, you're having the, you know, let's say the priest or the monk being austere. What do? You know, they live in a cave, they, you know, eat only dry bread, they flog themselves with a whip and all that kind of stuff. And you understand? So these are our concepts of like that. So the in between, that's just boring. That can't be, you know, that's not material or spiritual. It's just blasé. So we tend to bring these ideas of our mundane concepts of karma and jnana into Krishna consciousness, you know, which is natural because that's our background. But as we learn from the acharyas and from, you know, Krishna and that, how we apply these things, then you see is the problem is not engaging the senses. The problem is engaging the senses without Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So just like, let us say, for an example, that you have a friend and they have a huge mansion and all amenities are in that mansion, okay? And they tell you you're coming, that he's coming at this time, but you know, you say, oh, I'll come over at this time. He says, oh, I'll be busy, but yeah, you just come in and sit down and make yourself at home, right? So you go in the house, but you know, you'll have, you know, the one who's has the, you know, enjoying propensity is, wow, you know, here he's got all facilities, so they'll really go for it and try to enjoy themselves with whatever's there, you know, sit on the couch, put your feet up on the coffee table when you know you're not supposed to, and you know, all these kind of things like that, and you know, get out the TV, try to get something to eat, yeah, you know, at maximum whatever you can do with your senses like that, and but that'll be seen as wrong, right? Why? Because it's not in line with the mood of whose house it is. Now, let's say you have the other person, he'll go in and all that, and he won't do anything and sit anywhere. He'll sit on the floor, won't sit like this and that, and you know, like this, because he's not engaged, right? And that's the proper way. And okay, it's you know, it's not, it's, he didn't take advantage, but it's a bit extreme. It's still not considering the relationship, right? Because they're friends, so there's a balance. So now let's say he comes home. And now he comes home. Now we take the first case. He's just trying to go for it. So, you know, the friend just wants to have a nice, pleasant interaction between friends. But the, you know, the guest, then he's trying to enjoy the facilities to the max. Oh, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? You know, no, let's just talk. Or we're doing this now. Let's just keep doing this. And no, but we can, you know. It's not really considering the person, though it's engaged with and is connected to, but it's not that satisfying. But at least it's, you know, according to the, and if he's cool, okay, yeah, okay. You know what I'm saying? Or the other one is because he's so austere and he does nothing like that, so even the person, hey, eat something, no, like that, and like that, here, sit here, no, I like it on the floor. You understand? So this is karma, Mr. Bhakti, and jnana, Mr. Bhakti. We're connecting it to Krishna, but it's not about Krishna. So the normal thing was, is you're there at the house, you're not going to do anything weird, you're thirsty, you get something to drink. You know, you make yourself comfortable, you don't throw the pillows all over the house. Like that, you know, because it's there. But you're doing because you're considering him. How would he use it? Then when he comes home, it's the interaction or whatever's there in the facility. Then you're dealing with that, eating and talking and doing things in relationship to the person of the house. You understand? So it's not. So we talk about controlling the senses because we tend not to. Right? We talk about the impersonal because we tend to be. But we talk about engaging the senses in Krishna service because that's the natural position. But our definition of engaging the senses is, you know, at the maximum you can get. No, so therefore you have to control the sense. That's why the two are mentioned together. Does that make sense? But you see the qualities that come up first. Steadiness, go tolerance, these things, it's absence of sense enjoyment. These things come up first. Then you see he has all facility. You can say, okay, Krishna controls himself and all that because there isn't any facility. No, he has everything. But it's not about that. Like for that person living in the mansion, for him that's just normal life. So he's not trying to take advantage of it. That's just normal. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, he'll sit down and you know, eat one thing. He won't eat 10. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. So as long as we're eating 10, we're talking more about controlling the senses. But when we think it's about, you know, eating nothing, then we talk about no engaging the senses. So it's just a matter of both are mentioned because you have the distraction of karma and you have gone. So when Prabhupada's talking about how to engage karma, then having explained it, then he'll talk about jnana because you have to balance it. If he talks about jnana, then he'll balance it with the karma. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Karma yoga, jnana yoga. Because, yes, no? Very good? Yeah? Okay. Okay, thanks. Yes?
Could you have a book in the library, Radhadana Dhanavas, and it really interested me to know how, for example, Vishnu John Maharaj, Tom Krishna Goswami Maharaj, they were very much engaged in the countercultural movement, in trees. Way off the grid, as we would say. How is it that...
But in those days, that was the grid.
Yeah, that was the grid.
That was the grid.
That interaction, that countercultural movement. I mean,
it was just like, it was all happening, so...
But then how was it that they made, all of you devotees, really, how all of you made the transition into a movement that was very formal and power is understood in a way that could be considered contrary to the counterculture movement.
Aha, so by joining Krishna consciousness, did we go against the, the principles of our philosophy?
Yeah.
The point is if you're looking for, technically the counterculture, how it started is you're looking for what's the truth, what's the absolute. You know, it morphed later into all kinds of things. But the original thing, it was all about that, you know, working together, that community spirit, and trying to find, you know, higher levels of consciousness. So it's not a problem. So they didn't have problems with gurus and things like that. They just found that the gurus in the contemporary society weren't actually as guru as they thought. You know what I'm saying? So the corporate world and this and that. So... And for many of them, especially those that you see, or the early leaders in that, they came from that background. Means that, you know, in other words, the established, you know, authorities within the American culture, they were from that background, had rejected it because it wasn't giving any satisfaction, but they were looking for, you know, what's the actual truth. So when they came in contact with it, then they took it. You know, but at the same time, to work in those areas wasn't a problem because they actually were from that. Right? At the same time as they could, because of the content, then they could lead those who weren't. Does that make sense? Yeah. So if it's about the absolute, there's not a problem, because he sees the counterculture, the concept of having gurus and connection with India and all that was all part of the things. So, you know, half of those beads and what they wore were all from India anyway. Even though, you know. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, most places you take the madras and you put it on the bed or hang it on the wall, they'd wear it, you know. So it's like, you know, hey. You know. So it's not a problem there, because you're looking for the absolute. It's just like Lord Chaitanya with the Prakashananda Saraswati, is that they're all sannyasis, they're all Mayavadis, but they're looking for the absolute truth. So when they come across it, they take it. Or the four Kumaras, they're on the liberated platform, but when they come across transcendence, they take it. Right? So it's about that higher principle. Now, if it's just about the externals of, and that taste of that externals of the hippie culture, then I'm sure if you check in Oregon, there's still hippies today like that. I don't know if there's a lot of them, you know, because, you know, but yeah, there's probably still some 70, 80-year-old hippies around. You know, so the point is that it's that there's a principle that you're looking for, and if you come across that, that's why it's universal. That's why people can come from all backgrounds and be comfortable with it. You know. You know, you had what is it? In is it Michigan or Detroit? No, Detroit's in Michigan, yeah, so okay. Where you had the opening of the Fisher Mansion with you know, the girl from the Fisher family and Ambarish from the Ford family. Those two have been at each other's throats for decades. You know, I mean serious decades. Because it doesn't matter. You're all from, it's all about Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. And the neighborhood it's in, before it was, that was a high-grade neighborhood. But at the time, it wasn't. You know, it's just like the high end, and then everybody starts moving in, and then all the high end guys move somewhere else, and it becomes a low end thing. And then when it becomes too low end, and that, and everything becomes so cheap, and somebody comes along, buys everything, and it makes it a high end again. You know, it's just one of those. So it's here you have, you know, two parties that have never appreciated each other. You know, doing something in a high class place in a low class neighborhood. You know, like that. And they're inviting all the government people and this and that. And, you know, so they're doing things, making it all work. So, yeah, so you don't have to worry. The principle is always met. That's the thing, is that Krishna, see, as we go through, many of these qualities appear to be contradictory. So they're used in different ways, or different combinations, but the principle of Krishna's pleasure is the same. So when you have that one idea of Krishna, then all the secondary aspects, because that's where difference is. Right? There's one Krishna, and there's unlimited energies. Right? So the energies are all different. But because Krishna is the center, that's why they all get along. Right? Let's just say you have means you have all these gopis, and they're in their groups. They're not necessarily friendly with each other because they're competing for Krishna's attention. So they don't get along. But now let's say you're having Maharas, then all the groups show up because Krishna's the center there, so they can all work together. So the same group that can't work with each other when Krishna's the center, they can all work. And it's just like, let's say, Janmashtami is coming up. All the girls get together, they all do a nice thing, and all work very hard and make something really fabulous. But if it wasn't Janmashtami, right? Dot, dot, dot. Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the point, is that all these seeming, so it's, the hippie is not about the secondary, it's about the primary. So at least the hippies that it was about the primary, they became devotees. But not all those who became devotees in those days were hippies. Bhavananda Prabhu made it very clear he was not a hippie. He was the generation before. Right? Because hippies are, most of them, from the like me generation, you know, the baby boomers, that he and some of the others, and how you say, they were from the previous generation. So they were different. Hmm? Yeah, they were pre-World War II.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it means Bhavananda Prabhu, Umapadi Maharaj, Kirtananda, I think Hayagriva, Satsarup, Brahmananda. You know, they all had jobs, you know. Like that. You know, it's just like, well, jobs? Yeah. You know, so they had something to give up by taking up Krishna consciousness. The hippies, it's just, hey, regular place to stay and place to eat. Yeah, So it wasn't that they were... So some tried to make it, oh, okay, this preaching, it works for hippies. No, it just works for those who are sincere. Because Ambarish wasn't a hippie. You know what I'm saying? Somebody like that. This whole idea is, oh, we have to change everything because that only worked for them. No, you have to just give the absolute truth and those who are interested will come forward. It's not about a volume. You know, as we pointed out, is that you have world religions that, you know, millions or billions of people are involved. But the point is how many pure devotees are being produced. So, therefore, on the platform of karma, that karma mixed with, you know, their own concept of you know, it's just like, let's say, if you have the Judaic, there is standards of you know, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Right? You have the Islamic, there is, the Buddhist, there is. All world religions, basically, they have a standard of this. Christians, do they have a standard? There is nothing. What is Christian food? Christian dress? You know, when does a Christian sleep? When does he get up? You know, saying there's no rules on this, but all the other ones have. You know what I'm saying? So so the difficulty comes up is that you have to, how did we get into that one? What was the thread of that? No, I can't remember. There was a specific thread. It was an example of something. I've lost the thread, so. Yeah, so we won't follow that. So the point is that it's about the absolute truth. It's not about the secondary. The secondary you're using because you have to use some medium. And so you use it as long as it's valuable. You know, it's just like as long as the counter is valuable, you're using it. You know, the counter, the knife, the grater, the peeler, and all that. But once it's come to the point where that is accomplished, then it has to move on. It has to go in the pot. You know, and once it's done in the pot, it has to come out of the pot. You know, going to the serving, like that, and that onto the plate, and that into your mouth. You know, so it has to keep moving. So when it's about the absolute truth, then there's no problem. Right? So it's not about what you're dealing with. Oh, that way we're getting into popular. That's who it was. It was popular. That's the thing. So we're not developing pure devotees. It means to be popular means that just more people identify with it but actually don't make the effort to pure devotion, then what's the point? Right? You know, probably gives the example if you have a jewel, you know, a diamond, there's not as many customers. But if you're selling glass, so many customers. The glass that you put it right out on the street. The diamond, you keep it inside. You have to come into the shop to see the diamond. The glass you can see right out on the street. You don't even have to come in the shop. You know. So the whole point is that we're trying to give Krishna consciousness. And so the absolute truth is spoken. We're not worried if they're hippies or they're conservatives or liberals or this or that. We're giving the absolute truth. And if they want the absolute truth, they'll take it. And if they don't, it doesn't matter. Even you water Krishna consciousness down to where it looks like what they're doing, they still won't take it. Because they do what they're doing, they're individual and they're special and unique and no one else is like them. Does that make sense? So it's like that. You know, it's like what we say we make it popular, but then the thing is because there's nothing there, then of course it sounds okay. You know, what defines you as? You know what I'm saying? So it's so that's the whole difficulty. Yes.
I have a question about chanting of the pure holy name, because something similar Ayendra also said, that better to have one devotee chanting pure holy names than full temple full of neophyte devotees who's not chanting pure name.
No, but in what context?
I don't remember the context.
Means in the context of, let's say you have the preaching aspect, who will have the most effect will be that one pure chanter.
Yeah.
But at the same time, as all, if all those other neophytes aren't chanting, how do they come to that position of pure chanting?
Yeah, so the question just to call, achieve this pure chanting.
By wanting pure chanting. Means, is there something you can do to get pure chanting? The holy name is Krishna. So is there something you can do to control Krishna? There is one thing you can do. Right? Pure bhakti. So the point is it's by Krishna's grace that you're trying to, you've heard from authorities about it, you're trying to give up all these different things. And so then by Rupa Goswami's definition of what's pure bhakti, means that you're doing something favorable for Krishna, free from karma and jnana. And you're trying your best. You're seeing the qualities that are there. You're trying to use them when you're aware of them. You're trying to be not avoid the bad qualities when you're aware. You know, so that sincerity is there. And so Krishna then gives the intelligence, you move forward. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of being involved. That's the thing, is by chanting, that's how it goes away. The bad qualities, like the Rupa Goswami gives the example of a sugar candy, that it's the most pure state of sugar, right? So it's the most subtle, and then, but someone with jaundice, by tasting it, then it tastes bitter to them. But there's no other alternative other than continuing to eat the sugar candy. So by eating the sugar candy, then they'll become purified, and then it'll go to neutral. It won't be bitter. It'll go to neutral. Then it'll start to become sweet. Then it'll look like this. So there isn't any other process other than the chanting of the holy name to get to the platform of pure chanting. You don't have another process. Yes?
Sukadeva says that the person not achieving pure state of chanting because he doesn't want it, he just attracted to some other aspects.
Yes, but still, the only way to get them to there is, even they're attracted by other aspects, is by that continuous chanting in the association of devotees, you'll see. Then these other things will be purified and they'll give it up and they'll come too. That's the thing, is that the process of bhakti is so perfect that despite us, despite our natures and distractions and that, it still works. We have to remember that this is we may be looking at it, okay, there's good things in the material world and then there's bad things in the material world. And so only good things will work for bhakti. But we have to understand is that the material world is a prison. Everybody here is bad. Right? Does that make sense? Not necessarily how you say that they're lacking in great qualities of their glutamus maximi, but they are bad to the bone, right? You know, kind of thing. Yeah? So that, then they move forward by trying to emulate those things that are given by Krishna. The process. So chanting the holy name. So there isn't another process. So this illusion that, no, there's something you can do on the material platform to improve bhakti, that how does that work? You know what I'm saying? What would you improve in the prison to make the prisoner reform himself to fit into society, you know, which is outside the prison? What would you do? Put nice pillows, put nice bed sheets. You know what I'm saying? But that just makes it more comfortable there. Right? So what is it that you can do in the prison that will make them, you know, so it's only knowledge of what's outside, the cultivation of the practices that are outside, You know what I'm saying? Because in the prison, they have their own scene, their own society. You know what I'm saying? Who gets to eat their bun on their plate and who can walk up and take your bun on your plate? You know, they have a whole scene going on there. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole thing, is that unless you're practicing the qualities that are done by citizens outside the prison and practice that in the prison, there isn't something else. So only bhakti, so even if you're unqualified, it's only by practicing bhakti that you can, there isn't something else. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point is, even if that is the case, but there is still no alternative, still everybody needs to chant. So therefore, get that pure devotee to lead the kirtan of that temple of 30 not pure devotees. Then they'll all go back to Godhead. Okay. Is that good? Good? Okay, then. Okay, steadiness, straightforwardness, steadiness of mind, we call it, okay, equality, tolerance. So tolerance means there's forgiveness. Right? More tolerant than a tree means that one is able to forgive. That's the actual working principle. We're thinking, oh, I have to be tolerant, grit my teeth. But the point is it's always a problem until you forgive. When you forgive, where's the problem? So it's the ability to forgive that makes tolerance. No? That one went down like a lead balloon. No, tolerance doesn't mean I have to forgive that guy. I can just be tolerant on my own. Yes?
Just to clarify. So if I tolerate, I'm forgiving.
You have to be forgiving to be tolerant. Okay. So if you're not forgiving, you can't actually be tolerant.
Okay, I have to have the quality of forgiveness.
Yes, tolerant. Yes. That's why, by just saying being humble, then being tolerant, respecting everyone else, not looking for respect. Just by those four, then Lord Chaitanya is given the essence of all the qualities, all the culture, everything. And so just by focusing on those four, but all other things will fit into that. So we take it down is that humility is that you see yourself as the soul. You're not so if you're the soul, you're not the doer. The modes of nature are doing everything. So then how can you be proud? Right? Because if something goes on, it's either from the past, just from your karma, or by Krishna, you know, so but that's which is Krishna's grace, or now within devotional consciousness by Krishna's grace. So what's to be proud of? So that's why you see the devotee's always prideless. Right? He sees everything in connection to Krishna. And then tolerant means you're forgiving. It means you can forgive. People have done things, but the point is it's all being done by the modes of nature, and it's being done to your situation, which is not you. So you as the soul, what do you have to do with it? So that's why, you know, Sukadeva Goswami can walk down the road with all these punk kids there, you know, laughing and pointing and stuff like this, or the Avantipur Brahmin, you know, and tolerating all the local punks, or then Jarabharat, you know, the local dacoits, you know. So it's because there's no sense of, and then that means, and there has to be, you have to give up the sense of justice. As long as you think it's justice, that means you think that there is actually right and wrong in the material world. But it's all illusion. So it means how is it, where's the right and wrong? So right means it's connected to Krishna. Wrong means it's not connected to Krishna. So therefore, if you know, Krishna's okay, then this is the way it works. If it's outside of your duty, you can't do anything about it, then you just go with it. You understand? So you can go down quite a ways down the rabbit hole here. But if we just say tolerant, then we're pretty good. But as soon as we start going into it, then, you know, like it was good. Tolerant, yeah, cool, yeah, it's good. Yeah, everyone should be tolerant. like that, and I do so many things, everyone should be tolerant. When I said, that means you have to forgive. It's like, hey, wait a minute. Immediately.
So, how can one forgive, and how do I know I've forgiven or not forgiven?
Well, generally, when you're not forgiving, there tends to be some grumpiness there. And when we've forgiven, the grumpiness goes away. That's one way you can tell.
Pardon, I didn't get it. So
you didn't get that one. Okay. That you don't have any ill will towards the person.
Okay.
Like that. You give up that feeling bad towards them. Because whatever it is, whatever's the reason behind it, you don't judge it, you just step back from it. You don't have to come to a conclusion it's right or wrong, who's right or wrong. You just step out of that. As long as you're part of that, you're part of the material world.
So I don't hold something against.
Yes, you don't hold against, yes. Yeah.
So just let it pass.
Yes, let it pass. Water under the bridge. Or if you're from Sweden, dust under the carpet. Good.
The other day somebody was arguing that some Pakistani was saying that blasphemy can even lead to hanging or death, the death sentence of the person. So this other person was saying that, but one should have a freedom to express one's opinion.
Right.
So,
okay.
Blasphemy.
Okay, but then you say you should be able to discuss your opinion. So then that person is, now are they coming from the background of being nice, or they're talking about more political correctness? You know, the person who's saying that, you know, there should be freedom of speech. You know what I'm saying? So let's just take it that as political correctness. Because otherwise, why would they be speaking with the Pakistani Wala on political positions anyway, right? Because probably the person of Pakistan wouldn't bring up about blasphemy and all that unless there was a political discussion going on. Okay, so now we have this political position. Okay, so now let us say you can say whatever you like, right? You want to express your opinion. There's freedom of speech.
Yes.
Okay, so now according to the person who is saying, no, you can't, you know, this blasphemy, you know, like that, if you say something against, you know, God or the prophet or, you know, like this, or against the state, then, you know, we should have that right and everything like that. Okay, what if somebody walks into the room and goes, oh, look at that, there's a packy here, I'm not staying here, I can't stay here with all these low-class people. Now, what will that other politically correct person say? You can't say that, you can't discriminate like that, but it's freedom of speech. You understand? So the whole point is freedom of speech means as long as you speak freely the way the liberal says you can speak freely. If you speak any other way, then you're discriminating, you're, you know, there's a whole list of bad qualities they have. You understand? So it's not based on any authoritative position. It's just, what is the flavor of the day? Who's on the good list and who's on the bad list? If you're on the bad list, you speak, it's wrong. And if you're on the good list, it doesn't matter what you say, it's good. And that list keeps changing. Right? You know, it means the concept and the mechanics how this list works is you know, nicely defined, you know, how government works, you know, in the book 1984. So it's already been described. Does that make sense? No? No, 1984.
So if somebody blasphemes, how should we react?
Yeah, but my point is that what's favorable to God consciousness, that speaking is right. That which is against God consciousness, that's not good. You don't like God, then fine. That's, you don't like God. But if others do like God, why do you feel you have the right to speak about God against God, and they have to listen? But if they speak about God, you don't have to listen. So, I mean, how is this equality? How is this? So they've already made the statement, the position, basically that atheistic position, that, you know, that's the standard. But if they're actually broad-minded, why isn't theism also accepted? You know what I'm saying? And then people who take it further, they speak whatever they like in an uncultured way about things they shouldn't be speaking in forums they shouldn't be speaking in, and then they'll say that's freedom of speech. But freedom of speech meant you can talk about religion, you can talk about politics, you can talk about, you know, these social things, and people shouldn't stop you from talking. But it doesn't mean that they have to accept what you're saying. Freedom of speech doesn't mean the other person has to accept. That's not there. It's not in one of the rules. But they're taking it, no, you have to accept what we say. No, it doesn't. Freedom of speech means you can say whatever you like, but I don't have to agree with it. You know? But at the same time, you have to be cultured. You have to, you know, a gentleman speaks certain things in certain situations, and others they don't. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
To give up a sense of justice, does that mean that you simply see, okay, Krishna, say, allows that person to harm me again and again, but if Krishna allows that, it means that it's my karma, or...
There's something to learn there, yeah. Means we may avoid that situation, try to arrange our life that we don't come in contact with all that, but that it happens because others are in the exact same situation and that doesn't happen to them. You know, so therefore there's something else going on there. You know, so we just try to step out of it. It doesn't mean you don't try to protect yourself from any difficulty, but that it happens is it, you don't get that sense of justice. You just, that's what you're dealing with. You know, you open the window, it's cold, you close the window. You open the window, it's pleasant, you leave it open. You know, it's not a sense of justice. No, but it's supposed to be, this is summertime, it's supposed to be warm. You don't do that kind of stuff. Yeah.
You do in Finland.
I do.
Yeah. That's because there's an absolute standard. Yeah. Yes.
So Maharaj, about forgiveness, you mentioned that this one should understand that it's only the most that are in action and
yes.
The doer. And isn't it the same that the best way to understand forgiveness is to understand Maya, that it is actually the cause and the effect, that it is just when we identify with the senses and the mind and the body, and then we are deluded by that.
Yes. Yeah, it's all the same thing. Maya means the modes of nature. It's just a matter of whether you're being technical or not. You can just say Maya in general. But the point is that it's due to are identifying with the body that we think something happening to this or not is right or wrong. You know, if it happens, you know, if it happens here, then we say it's very bad. If it happens somewhere else, you just say, it happens, what to do? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like that. You know, it's like how you say, you know, you drive downtown and there's a few extra cars and, you know, so therefore, you know, instead of taking 15 minutes to get downtown, it took you 20, you know, so the traffic is driving you nuts and everything like that. But at the same time, as we hear about in Los Angeles, where, you know, the cars are stopped for, you know, 2 hours, or the M25 is the biggest parking lot in the world, or, you know, stuff like this, and yeah, you know, what to do. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of where we're identifying with it, then we see we have a problem. Where we don't identify with it, we're quite tolerant. Does that make sense? Right? In fact, the people that get out of their cars and dance on the roof, they get an Academy Award. Like that. But I'm sure if they did that here, they'd still, people would be grumpy. You know, so, yeah. Yes?
How does this leadership, this forgiveness correlate to this leadership quality of being able to give justice and punishments?
But according to what? According to what standard? What standard do you choose? What do you use as the measurement for justice? Do we use our conditioning, which is vikarma? Do we use varnashram, which is karma and pious? But, you know, above our pay grade? Or do we use Krishna consciousness, which is acceptable, which is accessible to us as souls? Yeah, unless you do it by that, you're not going to work. Because the point is you can't use the vikarmic measure and then expect that it'll give good results in Krishna consciousness.
So then you just develop these qualities, forgiveness, and brahminical qualities.
Yeah, in other words, based on the brahminical standards, based on authority, that's what we do. Not on general practice, but it's on authority. And you have to know it well enough. So that's the whole point. That's why we see is that the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, they both know Shastra nicely. Then because you have to be able to explain what you are doing according to authority. Does that make sense? So you have to know the angle that you're using to explain why it's done that way. The point is that you have that element where it's the material nature. It's always going to be weird. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So the principle is that you're trying to go beyond. So you start with what's in your sphere and how much that you can deal with until it gets to the point where there isn't anything about the material world that bothers you. Personally, for the mission, maybe there's something. You know, you have to be careful and all that. You have to see what's going to work there. But you have to go is that the mission's going by Krishna's power, not by the local public. It's not that the local public's opinion actually has really any effect. You know what I'm saying? Because we've had times where the public liked us and things are going nicely. We had times when the public doesn't like us. It still goes nicely. You know, because it's transcendental. It's in its own capacity. But if we project that, oh no, the karmis won't like this, it's like, yeah, so they don't like anything. What do they like? You say, oh, the karmis won't like this. We go out in dhotis. But what do they like? What should you wear that the karmi will go, wow, okay. What is it going to be? You know, wow, I want to join that movement because they dress so cool. Yeah. What kind of person is like that? The shallowest, you know, of shallows. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's about what do you represent? What are you doing? That's the kind of thing. This whole thing is that it's all based on what you eat, what you dress, what you do, this and that. They see your japa beads. And like every karmi knows what japa beads are. You know, and they know, oh no, he's chanting Hare Krishna, oh no, you know, like that. You know, it's like, they have no idea. They think, you know, what's wrong with your hand? That's all. They think it's a bandage. So it's there's no question of it. They think, you know, then they might think, oh, are you okay? You know, like this and that. So
broken?
Yeah, because you have the thing around your neck and your hand. It's like yeah, I just have to do this exercise. And they say, no, no, no.
Meditation.
Yeah, like that. Yes, and so these kind of presentations are based on the vikarmic background. They're not based on a pious. Otherwise, if it's based on varnashram, you would naturally accept the lifestyle and all that. We wouldn't accept that you're trying to go back to Godhead. You know, it's like, you know, you do your work, you get your results and enjoy yourself, and you know, you can do that forever. That's their idea. But that takes too much piety. You know? So the access is through the devotional service, then we're able to appreciate Daiva Varnashram. And that's as much as we need to be engaged. So we're engaged in the Vedic culture as much as what connects with Daiva Varnashram. But as far as Varnashram and all that goes, we don't have the piety. I mean, like, you know, we're in the minus, so, you know. So there's no question of that. Does that make sense? You know, one or two individuals might have in certain areas, you know. You know, they'll dress the part, but, you know, don't wash the feet after going in the bathroom, or, you know, stuff like that. So they have some aspect. But to have that whole thing where it's just so natural for them, it's not going to happen from the mundane platform. It's going to happen because of their absorption in devotional service, and from devotional service they gain all the qualities of the demigods. So then they can absorb in that. And so the point is if by Varnashram, then you can purify yourself, then coming in contact with Vaishnavas, you can take up that mentality and just see the essence. But we can't go up through that level. We're just coming in contact with devotional service, and from that, getting the essence. So why would we drop farther down into Varnashram than we need to? Because the whole point is in Varnashram is to understand that it's all about the primary. That's why it said sacrifice. It's about sacrifice, giving up for yourself, you know, all these different things, so that you develop the idea of that there's something superior, something higher, something more like that. I'm giving up, that's selfless. But it's not about the selfless. It's about doing things for Krishna. Does that make sense? If I'm doing something for Krishna, it's not for me. Right? That's the mantra. Idam Krishnaya, it's for Krishna. Idam Namama, it's not for me. It's for Krishna. It's not just idam namama. It's not for me. That's the material. No, it's for Krishna. It's not for me. Does that make sense? Is that good? Or?
As a leader, we can also, you have to, if there's something, you have to also sometimes be strong.
Yes, you have to be strong. You have to establish what's proper. You have to be strong, but it has to be based on the Krishna conscious standard. But at the same time as this presentation, doesn't mean that it's not cultured. Does that make sense? So we can deal in a cultured way. You can say you're wrong nicely. You don't have to yell and scream and all that. It's not. You know what I'm saying? It's not Hollywood, so. Like that. And even in Hollywood, no one likes it, but it makes money. But
right? I was once walking down the road in Mayapur, and Bhavananda Prabhu was coming towards me, and I just passed him, and he stopped me. He said, "Why don't you say Hari Bol?" So he was, I said, I didn't want to disturb you, I was thinking of Krishna. But anyway,
and then what did he say then?
No, you should say Hari Bol. If you meet a devotee, you should say Hari Bol.
In other words, if you make eye contact, if he's just looking like that, then you don't have to say Hari Bol.
Yeah.
But he noticed you, so then you say Hari Bol.
So this kind of, you could implement or teach the...
Yeah, but it's based on the principle that devotees have relationship.
Yeah.
So that's the whole point, is there's the culture there. There's that, you meet devotees, you interact. That's more important than just getting something done. He also could have said, "I'm from Finland. We don't say hi and bye to anybody." Like that. You know, just telling him that, you know, Kimmy's known as the Iceman. You know, so I mean, what can we do? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But you know, if you said that, he might have laughed. But. But the point is that it's there. There's a standard. And he was personally trained by Prabhupada, therefore anybody in the movement is in a position to be directed by him. So
maybe you should teach this kind of thing, thank you, please, I'm sorry, basic etiquettes.
But because it's proper within the Vaishnava culture, not because it's the modern thing. You understand? So it always has to go back. So here in Bhavananda Prabhu's case, he'll always take it back because that's what Prabhupada did.
Do you have some good recipe for how to create a nice atmosphere, like family atmosphere that Prabhupada created when he was here with everybody?
You could take, one cup of suji, one cup of water, one cup of milk, one cup of sugar, one cup of butter, and then after roasting the suji in the butter and putting the water and milk together in a pot and bring it to a boil, then pour that in and then cook it until you kind of get the, as you're moving the spoon, you kind of get the Dead Sea effect. No, Red Sea effect. Yeah, Red Sea, not Dead Sea. This phone, if it floats, that's a problem. But if it parts like that, then yeah. And then put it on the side, put a lid on it, leave it for like 45 minutes, good lid, like that. Then after that, then offer it to Krishna, and then after that, call all the devotees, and then you'll have that atmosphere you're talking about. Yeah.
It has been tested.
Yeah, it's worked.
In Poland, in old times, they had this 1 kilo bags of milk powder, and you know, it was communistic time. You know, we couldn't get anything in the shop. So in order to make a nice Krishna conscious atmosphere, you just cut off the top, you pour down water as much as it fits the bag, you add some sugar and you offer this and you know, everybody was happy.
Yeah.
For a while, because I fell asleep, but...
Yeah, but then when you wake up, you do it again. So,
but the recipe works every time. It was
very
nice.
Yeah, so like that, there's many recipes. Yes, and so those who are willing to be vegetarian, you know, and offer things to Krishna and like that, then they'll go back to Godhead. The others can stay here, be nice guys. Yes.
So Maharaj, thank you. I'll just bring up forgiveness quickly again. Is it that propensity of Maya? And then cause and effect to misguide us. It has all, everything to do with association. And
no, association's there. But the thing is we have the tendency to judge everything. And our judgment is what's good for us and what's not good for us. So that's why this point of judgment and all the forgiveness and all those things are to be adjusted, because we're supposed to come to the platform of it's judged by how it's pleasing to Krishna or how it's not pleasing to Krishna. Right, as given to us by authority. So that's where it comes in. So fault finding and all that, that's easy. Everybody can do that. Does that make sense? It's not like sometimes we take it that the fault finding is a special quality that we ourselves personally have that sets us apart from everyone else. But actually everybody, all they do is fault finding.
Yes, but our desires, aren't they very much dependent on association? What kind of, if you have divine association?
Yes, yes. Oh, you mean whether we're more critical or not depends on association? Is that what you're saying?
If we do sinful activities, something which is...
Yeah, well, that'll be you hang out with sinful people. If you want to do sinful stuff, you generally need sinful people to do sinful stuff with.
Yes.
Right? In other words, you know, there's a good chance the Pope won't sit down and, you know, swill a barrel of, you know, how you say, Heineken or something, you know. So, you know, you have to go to Bavaria and hang out with those guys. Right? Right. Or go to Ireland.
Won't be Heineken there?
No, it won't be. It'll be something else. Very true. But it'll come in the form of a keg in any case. Yes.
Is it the case to always see everything which happens to us as Krishna's mercy, and that one day we understand in the future that all this happened to me because it was going to help me to develop such and such?
It'll always help, because it means what alternative do you have? Means is the problem El Nino or?
No, I mean, one could also say, oh, it's just my karma. People can just add that it's actually Krishna's mercy.
Yeah, means Prabhupada gives that, there's, I think, one letter where he says that you look and you try to analyze, see what's the cause, because you know ultimately, of course, it's Krishna, but the cause of, okay, I'm getting this problem because I did this, and what I did there is not according to what's recommended in scripture, therefore then I got a bad result. That's pretty straightforward. Now, if you look at it and can't see any reason why you're getting that result, then Prabhupada says, then understand it's just coming from Krishna. And so just surrender to Krishna. So ultimately, it's all being arranged by Krishna. We say it's our karma, but it's devotees, once you develop faith, that means the newest devotee, once they develop faith, and that they have faith in Krishna as a person, that with an eternal form, that aspect, we're not talking of Gyata Sukriti before, but when they take up faith, then from that moment, they don't have any material karma. It's all gone. One chanting of the holy name removes all that. Right? But what you're still left with is the desire seeds and the ignorance, avidya. Right? Because avidya means we've come to the conscious, we've adjusted our consciousness where we see things from the secondary without Krishna. And that's avidya, because Krishna is everything. There's no such thing as something not being Krishna and connected to Him. So therefore, we're in the platform of avidya. Then from that, then we take up, I'm the controller and enjoyer. And then that develops all the desire seeds, the bija. Right? From the top, that's the second one down. Then what we call karma, that's then the third one. That's where then taking a desire seed, we act on it, so then it sprouts and then grows into a plant and all that. So the first thing we do is we're trying to control not sprouting any seeds. Right? That's the first thing we're trying to control, the senses. But what we were discussing before is that when you see like the Avantipur Brahman and all that, they're not dealing with these not sprouting seeds. They just don't have any interest in the material phenomena. So they're just only interested in serving Krishna. So they're beyond, they've gone beyond, they're now in knowledge. So there is no ignorance, therefore there are no seeds, therefore there is no karma. So for us, that first thing, it goes away. Just one chanting, it goes away. One holy name, it's gone. But the desire seeds are still there and our avidya is still there. By chanting Hare Krishna, by continuing, then those seeds become inviable, they won't sprout. But that means because you're absorbed in Krishna. If you're absorbed in the material energy, then you can sprout any one of them that you like. So it's, don't worry. Your free will is still left intact. And so, but you're working on and you're slowly, slowly understanding Krishna's position, our position, all that. So as the avidya is going down, then also all the array of desire seeds are also going down. So many that may have been there before joining Krishna consciousness, they're just gone. They just disappeared. And then in Krishna, a few of them are, so we know those are the stronger ones. Right? But it's gone down from thousands down to a handful. They may be a really good handful and very strong, but it's less. Does that make sense? So, therefore then, we're not dealing with karma. So any reaction we get for something is that medicine is medicine. Does that make sense? So if you have a cold, the medicine is the same as if you're a devotee, is the same as if you're not a devotee. Right? Maybe sans the chicken soup, but whatever. Does that make sense? So it's going to be the same. So if you're proud, and so that's not a useful item in Krishna's service, right? Mundane pride, because we think we're the doer and the controller. So then the things that will break that pride will be the same as if you were a karmi and you're proud, and so then the same things will happen to you. The difference is that for the karmi, let's say they're supposed to get, for the bout of pride they have in that and for what they've done, they get, let's say, 25 units of, pride-breaking, situation. But for the devotee, if they still have that same pride, they'll get 25. You won't get 26, you won't get 24, because 25 is the medicine. But now let's say the pride is reduced a lot, but still it's there. And so now it's at 10, so you'll get 10. But by karma, you should get 25, but you only get 10. But now if the pride is gone, you'll get nothing. And even if something does happen, you won't be affected by it. That's why it says the devotee's unaffected. So it won't bother you. So that's what's happening there. So it's just the medicine that's required. So even we're doing something good, what we're working for is something good, but if the attitude is wrong, it still won't work out. And we're wondering why it doesn't work out and why devotees don't appreciate and, you know, no one's cooperating and this and that, blah, blah. But the point is it's our problem. Because someone else does the same thing and it works fine. So in other words, Krishna is so individual that it'll work out like that just for us. Does that make sense?
So it's meant to bring us out from what you said, bad qualities.
Yes, it's to bring us out of ignorance. Ignorance here, we're not talking about the mode of nature ignorance. We're talking about avidya, the ignorance that's there before we come to the material world. The original ignorance where we don't see our relationship with Krishna. That's what we're trying to reform. And in that, we'll get rid of the mode of ignorance, bring up to passion, get rid of that, bring up to goodness, and from that try to go to pure goodness. But when you go to pure goodness, then the whole thing disappears.
So let's say I see some pride in my heart. So I don't want that reaction.
So surrender to Krishna.
So then I can just pray that, my dear Lord, I see this in my heart. Please remove it. Or...
Yeah, but you have to be consistent in that. So when opportunities to express the pride come up and you try to avoid it, then Krishna goes, okay. And then it goes away. But we say, Krishna, please remove the pride and all that, and then it comes up and like that, you know. You know, it's like when I always thought was quite humorous. You're standing there in front of the deities, taking darshan, you know, offering prayers, please engage me in your service, and somebody taps you on the shoulder and says, hey, I'm busy praying here. And they're trying to ask you, hey, Prabhu, can you come and help us with this? And, you know, don't you see I'm busy praying? It's like, kind of like a... But, yeah.
Yeah, this was what I was referring to yesterday, this introspection. Sometimes we just don't see what. Right here in front of me, in reality right now.
But don't worry, Krishna and his energies will keep running it past you until you do. So if that sincerity is there, then it'll go very quickly. And if not, it'll take a little longer. Yeah, so introspection is always part of the program. Like that. If you can be regularly introspective, that's good. Otherwise, Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends like akadasis, you know, you try to be introspective about your devotional progress and stuff like that. You know, it shouldn't be that, yeah, I'm doing so great, I'm fabulous, you know, and everybody else should keep up. No, that's not what we're talking about. So, okay. Yes?
Thank you, Maharaj. You talked about the seeds and it just got me to thinking about the different qualities and the spiritual development and about the forgiveness we talked about. Isn't it said that a person that practices self-realization has conquered the three gates to hell, lust, greed, and anger, but in lesser religions or other religions, there's still this, like, as we talk about the desires and the association and the forgiveness and all this, there's a lot of lust and things like this.
But it's always seen as not good. Any religion understands that lust, greed, and anger aren't good. So they're always trying to control, but it's just, you know, by good association, by engagement in positive activities, then it can be controlled to some degree. But if that's not there, then these things will naturally come up. So the point is that if they're only working with karma and jnana, it'll be very hard to deal with these things. But if you're dealing with bhakti, then these are controlled, you know, very easily.
Yes, and also if there's a lot of like lustful persons, then it's also very difficult for us to be austere ourselves.
Yes, so that's why you choose association that has the qualities of pure devotion, you know, or at least they're more advanced than you are. So you choose that as you advance than you. So association is the main thing in devotional service. It means everything works because of association. So that's what we're saying. We associate with devotees, we associate with the acharyas, associate with the scriptures. If we just associate with the internet, then association is not so great. You know, that's the point. Because there, everybody's materialistic. You know. So,
Maharaj, I had a question about the distinction between Daiva Varnashram and Varnashram, and what it means to establish Varnashram. Then we're talking about Daiva Varnashram.
Yeah, it means Varnashram is the generic thing because the mechanics is Varnashram. Mm. Using those mechanics for Krishna, that's called Daiva Varnashram. Mm. Using the mechanics of Varnashram not for Krishna, that's called the Surik Varnashram. Mm. So basically speaking, then it's all Varnashram. Because the mechanics are the same. It's just what is the, you know, it's just like you're cooking, and you're cooking in the temple. So you're cooking for Krishna, but if you go to a restaurant, they're also cooking, maybe in the same preparation, but they're not cooking for Krishna. Mm. But the technique is the same. So Varnashram, the technique is the same. Mm. But it's just when it's Daiva Varnashram, then it's just the essential points that are all connected to Krishna, like in the spiritual world. Well, in the material, if you're not following Daiva Varnashram, then they have all kinds of aspects to take care of all kinds of material desires. So it has more expansion. The more you have material desires, the more exact you have to be in following the technique of Varnashram. It's about pleasing Krishna, then it's much more simple. But it's the same thing, it's just that it's on a simpler and simpler platform. Like that, because you're dealing more with the subtleties of it, the metaphysics of it, so it doesn't require so much technique. But those things that are, you know, within the Krishna conscious practice, then the techniques may be the same, you know, the same degree.
Sure. So you mentioned that there's some aspect of Varnashram that's above our pay grade.
Means to get into that. In other words, if we're following Varnashram, not because it is connected to Krishna, then who has those material qualifications? There are people like that, you know, but generally speaking, they're born in India and they're called Smartas. So they're Brahmins, they live all those things. The lifestyle we live, they live that, and that's just normal for them. Yeah, they're just very clean, very organized. They do everything, and they do, you know, it's very regulated. They've been doing it. Their parents have been doing it. Their parents, in fact, they can say seven generations. Mm. And it's like that. So, you know, they're Brahmins. But the point is, and so that itself is nice, but the perfection of the Brahminical position is devotion. So what we're meaning is when we try to oppose the Vedic system using modern concepts, that's not pious. That's from vikarma. We're presenting it as if good qualities, as the West sees them, is on the platform of manamoy, you know. So it's dharma, but actually they're only presenting it on their atheistic principles of morality, not theistic. Theistic means it comes from shastra, right? It's for devotional service. Atheistic means it's the local society says. So it's coming from them, not from God. So it's not theistic. And then try to present that as bhakti, then kind of miss the point. You can take that and engage it in bhakti service, but don't say that it's necessary for bhakti. Bhakti is independent. And don't say that it is the standard, because it's below the standard. But if you're below the standard, and you use that position, the best of below the standard for Krishna, you get purified. But then you'll start coming up. But you have to understand is that the conscious anandamaya, that's the standard. Then practicing that, because it's not, we have to practice it, it doesn't come spontaneously, that's the platform of vijnanamaya. So we situate ourselves in vijnanamaya to practice anandamaya. But then to take pranamaya, which is the second platform, and then say this is the standard and devotional service can't happen without this, we're not even talking philosophy here. It's like not even understand. There's no intelligence, there's no discrimination. They can't tell the difference between the levels of consciousness and what's the difference in these things. So there's no education. So then why so much talk? Right? Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So as what Prabhupada has given us, that's Daivavarnasya.
Yeah.
You see when it's explained in 11th canto, what Krishna is talking about is Varnasya, what's the practice of the lifestyle of the pure Vaishnavas, is the exact lifestyle that Prabhupada gave us.
Yeah.
So Prabhupada already gave us that Daiva Varnashram, that Paramahamsa Varnashram. And so then we have to be careful not to neglect that and then take up Western, or to neglect that and then take up Asuric Varnashram. The point is we deal just how much you have to deal with the material energy. You know, we think, no, but it's so much is there. Yeah, but that's, you're just doing it as a matter of course. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like taking out the garbage. You pick up the garbage and take it out and put it where it's supposed to go. Right? And so for someone who does that regularly and is committed to the process, is it a big deal taking out the garbage? No. But in that, there are so many things. You're going to have to put it in a particular bag. You have to make sure the top of the bag's there. You want to pick it up in such a way that it's not going to break the bag. You know, you have to be able to carry it out there. You know, how you carry it. You don't want to bump into things because the bag's dirty. You know, and so many things. And how you're going to... You could have a long list of pages of details to look at in taking out the garbage. Mm. So because we say you take out the garbage and that's it, it already includes all those. So someone who doesn't actually understand the culture of taking out the garbage, then they say, no, it's all about this. You know, they're from the taking out the garbage club. You know, and so then they all, you know, hey, what kind of plastic bag do you use? And, well, I use the Z392. And, oh, yeah, I used to use that before. Yeah, but really, what do you use now? Oh, I use the A957, like that. And then they go, whoa, wow, what's that? Well, you know, it's biodegradable and all that. You know, the 97, it's not quite so... You know, they say it is, but it's not really like that. You know, it still takes 1,000 years to biodegrade instead of 10,000. But, you know, this other one, the you know, 57, that one, you know, that one only takes, you know, like 2 years. And if you use the Heinz 57, now that one biodegrades, you know, immediately. Right? So... We're not talking about that stuff.
Yeah.
We're talking about those who, it's just, you're living your life, and in living in life, there's garbage, and the garbage has to be taken out, so you take out the garbage. You don't have to make it into a trip. So therefore, the Varnashram aspects, they're just there, they're natural, that's the way humans do things. You don't make it a trip. As soon as you make it a trip, then it starts to take on the qualities of Asuric Varnashram. Or if you're opposed to it, then it takes on the Vikarma of the, you know, Pranamoy.
Yeah. So in trying to establish at least an understanding and following, then we would be careful not to artificially install all the details, like, you know, you have a tap in your bathroom and you have to wait for the guy to turn on the tap in the shower after you wash yourself in the bathroom.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Because the point is, you know, we're just happy if you just decide to wash your feet.
Yeah.
You know, we're cool.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you know, or even just start with washing your hands. Yes.
I have a question about there's some discussions, maybe not so much anymore, but still, like devotee care. Can you describe
devotee
that?
Care?
Yeah.
Should we care? Or should the devotees care?
Who is it?
Yeah, who's a devotee? What's care? Devotee care means that's the whole thing. We're always supposed to be taking care of devotees. But we don't take care of devotees as Prabhupada's given us, as Shastra gives us, so we have to come in from the modern. You know, like I was explaining, I think it was a couple of days ago, is that before urea, everything was organic. There wasn't anything grown in the planet that wasn't organic. Everybody ate organic. But then when that came in, then it was all that. And then man says, oh, this is better and this and that. Then when man figures out it's not good, now being organic's good because man said, not because that was the way God gave it. So we have to be very careful. We get into devotee care because man says so, then there's always going to be it's always going to have, residue. Right? But if it's because God says, so devotee care, start out with the dati prati grinati guya makati pichite bunkte bojayate. Be able to sit down and take prasad and not complain about sugar or this or that or some other, issue, political issue. Somebody tells you something in confidence, you don't go on the internet and then tell everyone, oh, what's going on, like this and that. And that somebody gives somebody something to somebody, then that's cool. It's not that, why are they giving, or why did they didn't give that to the temple, or no, that's not their money, that's Krishna's money, why are they giving it to him? Just be comfortable, just start there. Do what you can to take care. Because Shastra says that when we go devotee care because the karmis say, and try to do it the way the karmis say is care, then is it actually care? Because then you're only caring for the body, you're not caring for the soul. So are you caring for the devotee? So then we say bodily care, emotional care. Don't say devotee care. No, but devotees have all these needs and all that. But the point is yes, that's the conditioned nature. Who talks about engaging the conditioned nature? What's Varnashram for? Engaging the conditioned nature. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing. So it's a matter of the angle you come in from. Otherwise, devotees need to take care of the devotees before, and like things like that. I remember once one devotee was telling me, I think there was this, may have been, I can't remember when it was, it may have been 68 or something. They were in New York doing Harinam, and it was some famous riot. The hippies were doing some kind of riot. And the police came out with tear gas and that, and so everybody, the devotees that are doing kirtan, and somehow or another they got caught on the edge. So from that, from the tear gas, because, it goes in waves like that, one of the brahmacharinis fainted. So, whoever was leading the thing says, okay, time to get out of here. So one of the brahmacharis just picked up the girl, put her over his shoulder, took her to the bus. They put her down the bus and all that, then the girls take care and they go on like that and nobody even thinks about anything. You know what I'm saying? So they take care. But at the same time, it's not a take care, Otherwise, it's, he just take care. Why the brahmacharya is taking care? But then if he takes care, why is he taking care? What is his motive? So then you get into all this weirdo stuff. Does that make sense? So there's a sense of community. If that's there, then naturally you take care. Does that make sense? We talk about things and that and come and give the emotion. That's nice. That's great. But, if we're talking community take care, then community itself has to take care of itself. One devotee was telling me in the Marwari community, before, I don't know if they do it anymore, but he's saying before is that all the Marwaris, they stay in their one town. A new Marwari moves into town, so he's part of the community. As soon as he moves into town, everybody in the community will give him 1 rupee and 1 brick. Means literally 1 rupee, 1 brick. With that rupee, now he has enough money because there's thousands of Marwaris. He starts his business. And with the bricks, he builds his house. Didn't cost anybody anything, right? 1 rupee and 1 brick, what does that cost you? This guy now has his investment, for the business, and he has a house. That's community stuff. That's devotee care. I don't see that. So therefore, it's just the modern context, get together and feel good, and how did the authorities make you feel bad, and stuff like this. And yeah, we're here for you because we're the Suri Dham Sarva Bhutanam, and all that kind of jazz. So you have to be very, very careful. It's that the devotees, it says here, intolerance of another's unhappiness. So that's anybody's unhappiness. But we choose, if you're a victim, then we're that. But anybody else, then they're unhappy. No, no, because you're causing this. Does that make sense? So it's a different context. And we choose our own. Even we say it's the modern, it's not. We make it our, we somehow know the uniquely make it our own. You know? So we have to be very, very careful is that we're basing things on scripture, on tradition. So that means we appreciate the culture, we appreciate what's going on, we see what's there. The histories from Mahabharata and Bhagavatam and Ramayana, we use those as the basis. We don't say that, well, I come to India and there's all these, rickshaw wallahs, and when I come out of the airport, all these guys, yelling and screaming, trying to get me to take their taxi, and this guy cheated me this and that, and when he got in the taxi, then he went to his home first and, picked up his lunch, and then he got in this and that, and these guys are useless and that, like that, so I have nothing to learn from Indians. It's like kind of like, yeah, okay, if you want to look at it from that side, but are these the Indians that those Indians are looking towards? You know what I'm saying? There is culture, there is things. You just have to know where to look for it. So we have to use that as a basis. That's why Prabhupada made the Maya Professor. Devotees come and they see, they associate, they... You know what I'm saying? It used to be before, you come, devotees sat, Indian cooking, sit down in lines, you eat, you serve, you learn how to do these things, then they go back to their temples and then they do these things. It was nice. Now you come and it's all... How you say? Buffet. Like that. But, is it as nice as they'll make in Sweden? No. So then, what is it? You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that it's just... We're not using our own culture. And then we're blaming that, that that's the thing, but... We always have to remember we joined Krishna consciousness coming from a background of our own culture, and it wasn't nice. That's why we took up Krishna consciousness. So you have to keep in mind, but yes.
I'll be very quick, Maharaj. I just want to make absolutely sure that I understand that it's the onus is on me if I want to please Krishna, that I must forgive an atheist demon who's tried to cheat me out of my partner's inheritance.
But it doesn't mean that means you let them cheat you out of your money.
Certainly not.
But it doesn't mean that they're demons. They have to do this. And so you, as a devotee, you're clever because you want the money for Krishna.
Yeah.
And so therefore, you're going to work in such a way that they can't cheat you. It's just like that man in New York. Then he was doing some deals about buying a place. Then Prabhupada went to India, and then that man continued with the devotees. And then he took money, I need $5,000, then we can, get this and that. But then nothing was happening. Papers weren't coming. So when Prabhupada came back, then the devotees, he said, so how's it going? He said, this is what happened. So Prabhupada went to the guy's office and says, the Swami is back. Where's the $5,000? Guy just brought it out immediately because you don't mess with the Swami. Yeah, because it's Krishna's money. So it's just, like that. But it doesn't mean that, you're sitting there and grumbling, and this guy, and why is he cheating? Why can't he be nice? Because he's in the material world. Of course he's going to be a demon. It's like, that's what it means. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yes. From Iran. Okay.
Participating in a conference in Lapland University, and we had just 2 days in Helsinki, and we were so lucky that we had honor to listen to you both days.
Okay.
So I'm very grateful to you and also to all the devotees that
accepted
us, and especially to
very good.
Honor, and I think
okay, very good, very good. Yeah, worked out nice. Haribol. Okay, so end here. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaur Pranandi.
Haribol.